Welcome everyone to the 2025 Yukon River In-Season Salmon Management Teleconference. We greatly appreciate you taking the time to join us today to kickstart these important discussions regarding the management of our vital Yukon River salmon runs. My name is Serena Alstrom, and I'm the Executive Director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. It is my pleasure to serve as your host for this teleconference season. We have a number of key topics to cover over the course of the summer season, including the latest run assessment data, current environmental conditions, ongoing management strategies, and opportunities for input and feedback from our stakeholders. Your active participation is crucial to ensuring the sustainability and health of the Yukon River salmon for future generations. We extend our sincere gratitude to our funding partners for this season, the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission, and the Pamela Chiefs Conference. Their substantial support has been essential to enabling us to conduct this year's teleconference. This teleconference platform facilitates timely communication among local users and fishery managers to the wild expanse of the Yukon River. It serves commercial processors, researchers, managers, and other users to exchange real-time local observations, research and monitoring data, management strategies, and goals. This ensures immediate access to information and enables effective in-season salmon management discussions. Initially created to facilitate communication between local users and fishery managers, these teleconference calls now must require a significant reconstruction due to evolving salmon run sizes and the concerning ongoing declines. The original purpose of bridging the communication gap remains crucial, but the current circumstances necessitate a more robust approach. Our goal is to transform these calls into a platform that generates more actionable feedback, providing valuable insights and recommendations to relevant organizations and management entities. To ensure the teleconference calls effectively contribute to tangible improvements in fisheries management and to provide updates in Yukon River research to interested parties, the call format, discussion topics, and feedback mechanisms will undergo reconstructing of how the calls will be delivered. We greatly appreciate everyone's feedback and concerns about the declines of our salmon. Over the course of my experience, I have heard over and over again the same concerns that have been voiced. I think the time has come to create plans around those concerns. During the 2025 preseason meeting, the tribal representatives broke into groups to discuss the threats of our salmon. From those threats, we were able to draw some ways we can produce solutions. As we move forward with these 10 calls, we want to guide the conversation in a solution-oriented fashion. Now, as always, the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association in-season subsistence salmon survey is currently getting started. We thank the National Park Service and NOAA for funding the program this year. This year, the surveyors are using a digital app version of the program and hope to make it available to the public soon. We'll update you when it is ready to download from the App Store. We want to encourage fishers and in-season survey communities to reach out to their local surveyor and share what they are seeing on the river. This program is a way for fishers to anonymously share their observations as well as their concerns or challenges with the managers and the rest of the river. The in-season survey communities include Alakanak, Mountain Village, Marshall, Russian Mission, Anvik, Huslia, Ruby, Tanana, Fort Yukon, and Eagle. I'd like to welcome all the new callers and our new board members as well. We encourage young fishers to participate in the calls to learn and engage in Yukon River fisheries. I ask all our participants today to please be respectful of one another. This space is to be used as a communication tool between all users of the Yukon River. By working together, we can foster positive outcomes when we support one another. Loyani to all of you for your time and your participation. As always, please press *6 to mute and unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute. Background noise and conversations are disruptive to callers who are sharing important information. And let's get started. So if I have any media on the line, can you please announce yourselves? Do we have any of our government representatives or staff members on the call today?
Hello, this is Wayne Pitkin, GMS.
Good afternoon, Wayne.
Good afternoon.
I will turn it over to the Yukon Area Managers from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Do we have Dina Jalin or Fred West on the line?
Hi, Serena. This is Dina. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I'm out here in the Amonic office. Fred is actually in Bethel, probably on his way here now. Do you want me to give an update now, or are you just doing roll?
We can go ahead and provide your report and your assessment.
Okay. Yeah, assessment projects are just getting started in the Lower Yukon so far. Just the Lower Yukon test fishery down here in Amonic is operating and the pilot station sonar. The Lower Yukon test fishery started with drifts with snagging nets in late May just to clear the drift zones and get drift and wood out of the way. And then they started fishing at Big Eddy and Middle Mouth on June 2nd and June 3rd. Catch rates have been low. We haven't gotten very many fish yet. They started off with some sheafish catches. But so far we've just been getting most of the few chum that have been caught have been coming from the Big Eddy site because the fish haven't moved around to start coming into the Middle Mouth site to the Middle Mouth yet. Pilot station sonar went in early June and they started estimating salmon passage on June 4th. They recently had some high water and a lot of drift come through and so they had to move the sonar pods to keep them from getting damaged. But the drift has gone by, the water level crested and has gone down a bit up at that site, so they're back to operating at full capacity. As most folks know, we're going into this season with low salmon forecast for Chinook salmon, and so that's why we've started with closures for salmon as we were looking at the run going upriver. So those closures for salmon started in June 1 in District 1 in the coast and have been working their way upriver and have been announced as far up as Galena and Ruby in Subdistrict 4B and 4C. We're waiting to see the summer chum run pick up. We haven't seen a lot of fish coming in yet, but once the summer chum run starts to come in more, and if we get an in-season projection that the run is going to be above at least 500,000, we'll start to announce openings with dip nets and beach seines and fish reels for summer chum salmon. But we're just trying to wait and see that run develop a little bit more before those get announced. However, we do know that the Chinook salmon run is going to be low. It's unlikely to meet any escapement goals in Alaska or Canada. So in addition to the closures of salmon gear that are going upriver, we're also announcing the closures of 4-inch or smaller mesh. So similar to last year, folks will have to pull all their gill nets out of the water during the Chinook salmon run. And we've got those dates announced for the coast in District 1 and District 2. And so those dates are based on the timing of the quarter points of the run from recent years. So in District 1, all gill nets have to come out of the water from 8 p.m. Monday, June 16th until 8 p.m. Thursday, July 3rd. And then in District 2, all nets have to come out from 8 p.m. Wednesday, June 18th until 8 p.m. Saturday, July 5th. Those announcements, the announcement for the Coast District 1 and 2 were just published today. They're shared on Facebook. The phone recordings have been updated. And the weekly update was also just published and put out on Facebook. So if folks have any questions about the announcements or the update, check your email, see if you subscribe to the news releases and are getting those in your inbox. You can also always call the toll-free fishing schedule at 1-866-479-7387, and that'll have your updated fishery management actions and also in-season counts from pilot station sonar and the Lower Yukon test fishery. So, yeah, that's about all I got for management from Fishing Game down here in Emo.
Great. Thank you, Dina. We will move on to the Yukon Area Manager from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Do we have Holly or Shane on the line?
Hi, this is Holly Carroll. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much. We don't have too much extra to report additional to what the state has reported. You know, we're working together on management, the actions that you're seeing now. Just as a reminder, even though we're sending out federal news releases and showing the federal public waters, our management actions match the state. And when you are out fishing for your non-salmon, you do not need to be a federally qualified user. We don't have conservation concerns for those species, and so we are not limiting non-salmon fishing to federally qualified users. So I just wanted to make that clear. I guess I also want to make clear that, you know, if you do have a 4-inch gill net out and you are targeting your non-salmon, we really ask you to try not to target salmon with that gear. Every fish counts right now, getting them to the spawning grounds. And then I just wanted to follow up that if you ever have questions and you want to call and ask questions about management, I'm going to give out my management, my cell phone right now. You can text me or call me on that. It's 907-351-3029. I really welcome people getting in touch. I've already had a few calls and questions. It's just really great for us to hear what's unclear in our announcements, because we can do better and we can learn from that. So we appreciate your feedback. So please give us a call. Again, that cell phone is 351-3029. And then I guess the following thing is, you know, we do have some projects that we run, and one of the well-known projects that we run is the Andrievsky River Weir. And last year was our final year of operations. We've been challenged to run that project successfully, partly because of really flash flooding in the area and not being able to run it. We've had warm water, which means it's unsafe to handle the fish for taking data. And we've also had challenging hiring capacity issues and funding issues. And so last year was the last year, and this year our crew will be out in St. Mary's, and we are removing the project, decommissioning it, and kind of returning our leased land back to the state it was in that we found it in. So you may see us on the river, but unfortunately we won't be able to be providing any more Andrievsky Weir data at this time. We do have some other interesting data that we are working on and getting off the ground. And if Shane Ransbury is on the call and wants to give a brief update on that, I think that would be really great to just let people know what we are trying to do right now. So with that, I will pass it off to Shane Ransbury. He is our assessment biologist.
Hey, everybody. This is Shane Ransbury from USFISH Wildlife Service here in Fairbanks. So I don't have too much to update on, but in a few weeks here, we're starting up the Kaikuk sonar feasibility project, where we're gonna try to develop kind of a large-scale sonar to count fish up the Kaikuk River, but it's the very early stages of that. So we're just checking bathymetry and trying to find some site locations and stuff like that. And we have permission from Gonneau Corporation and the refuge over there to kind of go around and view some of the areas between the village of Kaikuk and the Thassa River mouth. So you guys might see us around in there, and that's kind of what we're doing. We're just moving a lot and camping along the banks a lot. And then hopefully that will eventually turn into something that is viable as a way to count summer chum and Chinook salmon going up the Kaikuk. And if we did that, it would be in concert, I guess, or working with the Tribe of Kaikuk and Tana Chiefs Conference. And other than that, we'll have updates later on in the season. But besides, you know, working on taking down Andrievsky and starting up this Kaikuk sonar feasibility thing, we're kind of just working away for now. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Holly and Shane. We'll now turn it over to the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Do I have Jacqueline Kendall on the line?
Good afternoon, Serena. Am I coming through okay?
You are. Go ahead.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. I'll start us off here. Not too much happening quite yet in Canada in regards to assessment, but I'll let Adam speak to that after I'm done here. Right now we're working to finalize the 2025 Canadian Management Strategy by the end of the month, so it's in effect as of July 1st. We'll again be informing that strategy by the 7-year agreement, along with any recommendations from the Yukon Salmon Subcommittee resulting from consultations with Yukon First Nation governments and community members this year. Unfortunately, with the pretty low preliminary Canadian origin Chinook forecast, that's just around that 18,000 mark, we will be closing the recreational fishery, and the current long-term closures in the commercial and domestic fisheries will remain in effect. And yeah, over the next little while, we'll be working to set up some of our domestic intergovernmental conference calls where we share information collected by assessment programs over the course of the season. So not too big of a report for me, but I will pass it along to Adam O'Dell, who's our senior stock assessment biologist, for any updates he wants to provide in terms of upcoming assessment programs. Oh, Adam might be having some difficulty unmuting. Adam, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Am I coming through?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about
that.
Okay. So I'm Adam O'Dell. I'm the senior fisheries biologist with Fisheries and Oceans Canada in Whitehorse. Like Jocelyn was saying, I mean, we're just ramping up right now and things are still in the planning phase. The porcupine sonar project, that should be in mobilization within the next week or so, and then planning to have that operational by July 1. And we also have some technicians who are going to be supporting ADFG and the Eagle sonar project as well, and similar timeline there. Folks should be headed out there in about 10 days or so, and then planning to have that sonar project up and operational by about the start of July as well. In addition to those, there's numerous other projects that are happening within the territory, most of which are led by Yukon First Nations. And if there's folks on this call, I defer to them to speak to it. But none of the assessment projects have begun quite yet. I would say that these first two, the Porcupine and the Eagle Sono projects, are typically the first two that would be initiated. And then as the season progresses, we should see a ramp up in various other projects as well. And just as a recap, I mean, this year we were looking at about 30,000 Canadian origin Chinook salmon to enter the Yukon River. And given those recent years' mortality or presumed mortality within the river, we have seen a fraction of those actually reaching Canada, reaching the border. And this year, that estimate based on the previous year's mortality is approximately 18,000 Chinook salmon to reach Canada. So as was stated with Dina and Jacqueline, these are pretty low return years, and as everyone's all familiar. So I can leave it at that. If there's any subsequent questions, I'm all ears. But yeah, thank you.
And my apologies, Serena. This is Jacqueline Kendall again. I will have to step off the call today, unfortunately, at 2:30. But I will be on next week's call for the full call. I just have another meeting to jump to, so I apologize for that.
Thank you, Jacqueline and Adam. We'll move on to Yukon River Organizational Report. So do we have anyone from the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission on the line?
Hi, Serena. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Janessa Newman with the Fish Commission. We don't have too much for updates other than very high level. So after 10 years of being under TCC, the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission is now its own 501c3, an independent tribal organization, as of March 2025. The Fish Commission currently serves 44 member tribes by tribal resolution. Presently, we have two Fish Commission staff members, Jasmine Bent from Puslia and Ambler. She serves as our Indigenous Communications Director, and myself, Janessa Newman. I serve as the Indigenous Stewardship Director. The Fish Commission met in Fairbanks April 26th and 27th. And while we were there, the commissioners passed 4 commissioner agreements. We all have a shared responsibility to our river. Our salmon relatives need our help. Our children and grandchildren deserve our ways of life. We agreed to work together. The Executive Council is having a work session next week, and at that time you should get a clearer idea of what they would like us to share on behalf of the Fish Commission.
Thank you, Janissa. Do we have anyone from the BBAYK group? Do we have Gail Vick on the line? Okay, we'll move on to Canadian First Nations. Elizabeth McDonald, are you online?
I am, Serena. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm with the Yukon First Nations Salmon Stewardship Alliance, and we support First Nations with a lot of their work. Currently, some field work is getting started. Some of our crew is out continuing the water temperature monitoring project that all started. There's about 13 years of data now, so they're out changing out temperature loggers. And then for First Nations, I do know quite a few have plans to get out. I don't know if they're getting out quite yet. It's still pretty early for salmon work on our side. But we do have some projects going for invasive species in the Whitehorse area as well. I know Little Salmon Carmax is working on some beaver dam problem areas and trying to get the migration routes cleared for the Chinook salmon when they come through. Otherwise, well, there's lots of preseason meetings. We are just kind of wrapping up part and a few more still planned. So that's been a big part of, I think, most First Nations priorities is just, making sure they're meeting with communities and getting that input and making sure people understand what's going on and how poor the run is going to be this year for both Chinook and Chum. Yeah, so not a lot of updates yet. Oh, the one thing I should say is that the river is very low in quite a few places, and people are commenting on it. So if our end of very cool spring, so not a lot of meltwater yet, but maybe a little bit of concern I keep hearing from individuals across the territory. Yes, thank you, Serena.
Thank you, Elizabeth. We'll move on to the Yukon Salmon Subcommittee.
Hi, Serena, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hi, so this is Taylor Bradley with the Yukon Salmon Subcommittee. Not too much to update. As the other Canadian members of the call said, we're still a little early season here, but lots going on across the territory. Like Adam mentioned, we've been engaging with the community in a few meetings just to hear from community members their concerns with the run and just trying to make sure, like Elizabeth said, that we can share as accurate information as possible. We have issued our recommendations to the Minister of DFO and to Yukon First Nations, and those are confidential until we receive a reply. Like Elizabeth mentioned, I was going to say that the river is low, and in the Southern Lakes area anyways, there is some concern that I've heard from people as well. So much the same as Elizabeth, and not much else to update.
Great. Thank you, Taylor. We will now turn it over to Melissa Johnson, who is an AP member of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. Melissa, are you online? Just remember to press *6 to unmute.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you so much, Serena, and members
This is Melissa Moktoyak Johnson, originally from Nome. I am a tribal member of Nome Eskimo community. I serve on the advisory panel in a regular public seat to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. The meeting just concluded today. Two big agenda items that were in discussion in Newport, Oregon, which is about 3 hours outside of Portland on the coast. One being the pelagic trawl agenda item. And for the most part, it was pretty neutral, but there's still some areas where we could potentially, you know, get some action regarding the definition and the gear innovation, you know, like to modify to our sector. And I guess in, like, thinking about the pelagic trawl, anything related to that, just to inform members of the public that the salmon excluders and electronic monitoring still need some work as far as Office of Law Enforcement, you know, regulatory perspective, and that regarding the innovation related to research and timelines, we should, sorry, I'm just reading my notes here. There is talk about revisiting the gear definition in the future, but given the political uncertainty, hopefully by 2026, but that's not 100% confirmed. And the next item on the council agenda that was mentioned is under staff tasking regarding the Chum Bycatch EIS that is still tentatively scheduled for December 2025 in Anchorage. The council has not made a decision at this meeting today regarding that agenda item. They want to see to what level and when they get more information regarding their grant to keep function of the council. Right now they have received 46% of their grant allocation, and they were due to get their remaining funds in March of this year, but have not. So more details as it comes available, you know, into the October meeting. They're in regards to the funding component, they're hoping to get keep us informed in the next month or so, and you know, in regards to the schedule. And the chair, Angel Drobnicka, she had mentioned that she hopes to get or have outreach with tribes and tribal serving organizations regarding the movement of the Chum Bycatch December schedule. And pretty much, and the other part is that, and this could be mentioned on other calls in the future, but July 11th, the reconstituted ecosystem committee on the council is accepting nominations until, again, July 11th, and there are a couple of vacancies on the SSC and the AP, so be on the lookout through council news. I'll send any updates to Serena to share with folks as we get those notifications. So that's pretty much the gist of the June council meeting, again, that was held in Newport, Oregon. So Serena, happy to answer any questions, or I'll go from there. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Melissa. Greatly appreciate your update. I'll give a brief update on Yurtva. It is the field season, so we do have a few crews out in the field right now. We have a crew out on the Dalton Highway doing some assessments and stream assessments. We have a group, staff, Yurtva staff, headed out to St. Mary's today. They will be having a meeting tomorrow at 10 a.m. to go over some projects that are being done in St. Mary's, along with some information regarding how to get more involved with the Board of Fisheries process. The newly appointed Board of Fish member, Olivia Irwin, will be joining the meeting. So please make your way to St. Mary's at the City Hall at 10 a.m. The meeting's tomorrow. Again, there'll be updates on our current projects that are going on out there, along with some materials on how to get more involved with the Board of Fisheries. Let's see. We've got quite a few things going on. Again, our survey program is underway. It makes its way up the river. So please contact our surveyor in those communities that I listed this morning or earlier during the call if you have any questions. I'll leave it at that for now. Just a reminder, we're going to be reorganizing these calls. We'll still have the assessments from management, and then we'll be giving a more thorough update on the preseason meeting and going over the threats and the solutions that were generated from the tribal representatives that attended. Then we'll be posing a few questions to the people online, in addition to any questions that people might have for management. So just stay tuned. We're going to try this out this season, see how that works. Right now, I'm going to call on the communities for any reports and any questions they may have for the for ADF&G, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, or Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada, and for any of our Yukon River organizations that are online. I'm going to be calling by district just to try to go a little bit faster through the call. I'll first call on the coastal communities of Chivac, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. If we have anybody on the line, please unmute by pressing star 6 or using your mute feature on your mobile device. Do we have anyone from the coastal communities of Chivac, Cooper Bay, or Scammon Bay on the line? Again, please mute your phone by pressing star 6. Someone is not muted. Thank you. You're still not muted. Mike, if you could assist with muting whoever's on not muted and making noise, thank you. Hearing no one from the coastal communities, we'll move on to District Y1. Do we have anyone from Nunam, Alaganak, Kuymanak, or Coffic on the line? Okay, hold on. Someone is not muted. Thank you. Okay,
hi, Serena.
Hi, is this Marvin?
Yeah, good afternoon. Good to be a part of it, have this teleconference again this year. There was a lot of debris coming down the river or the since breakup. Not much firewood, driftwood, but there was some when I went out once with my family and kids. It was good to be out there. Water levels have dropped considerably, but we are having tides right now with the south wind. I haven't heard anyone setting nets or anything out, even for whitefish right now, but they were rotting last week and 2 weeks ago, and we're catching some sheafish. So, but then, let's see, a week week and a half ago, they were getting smelts too. So they passed, and we're just waiting for the. I hear there's lots of high water up in St. Mary's up and driftwood coming down, so we're waiting for that. Besides that, just a cold, cold spring so far. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Marvin. Do we have anyone else from District Y1, Nunam, Alakanap, Imanak, or Kathak?
Max Aguirre, hello.
Hi, Max. Go ahead.
Yeah, I really haven't heard anybody fishing, but like Marvin said, about 3 weeks ago, they're getting quite a bit of smelts on the south side, and there's been debris flowing, water dropped, not much happened during breakup. It was more of a melt-off, and that's it.
Thank you, Max. We'll do a last call for District Y1, Nunam, Alakanap, Imanak, or Kotlik.
Afternoon. Gabriel from Alakanap.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I've been going out, been catching some kawaktoks and some maniginaks, but the last two fishing I went out for less, I had never seen, I don't know if they're, I mean, I never did really see them like this before, but the last fish, the two we caught, we had to throw them away. Only mistake I made was I didn't take a picture, but they were really skinny, but their bellies were way, they were way, you know, like it was puffed up belly part, and but really skinny. That was the only one concern I was kind of worried about. And we didn't use a king net or a chum net, so we were worried about that. We know that the count would be low, but we know that some people caught really, really low count of kings during the opening of the subsistence. But the only part the concern was about the last fish. You know, that's one of the good foods we have. That was the only concern I had was about the last fish. Thank you.
Thank you, Gabriel. We'll move on to District Y2. Do we have anyone from Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's Pilot Station, or Marshall on the line?
Hello?
I'm going to go. Did you eat? Okay, I'm going to...
I didn't eat it. Anyone from District Y2 on the line?
Good afternoon, Karina. This is Stanislav.
Hi, Stanislav. Go ahead.
I mostly think of you for income wise, so they help you all the name.
Can you please press star 6? Okay, Stanislav, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Serena. I'm very happy this is the Yukon River is doing this teleconference, and I hope in the future to come every Tuesday 1 p.m. that more callers would be involved. You may be surprised. I'm calling from my fish camp down here in Anunnak River. It's right at the borderline between 1 and 2. For the past 4 days, 4 or 5 days, the water been rising, and I made a trip down to Emo yesterday, and there was some debris drifting, no logs, only kind of like what we call trash wood. Didn't see of any see or hear of anybody with any 4-inch nets out. But I did run into one boat heading down to a fish camp. So there's two here in the lower Yukon, Y2 camping. Camps are occupied. Haven't really heard anybody setting 4-inch in mountain, although I've seen one 4-inch net set out at a Kamanak about eight or 9 miles below mountain. Nobody's really reporting any fish, salmon being caught. I had pulled out my 5 7/8 and 5 1/2 for 3 fish and whitefish on the 1st or 2nd of this month, because I got my fill of sheepfish and whitefish. I'm smoking them out there in the smokehouse right now. So water's kind of steady right now after coming about, I'd say, 8 to 10 feet. And it's staying steady. Other than that, it's been cold. Fish are taking a little bit longer to dry in the smokehouse than they usually are because of this cold spring and beginning of the summer. And when I was talking to one local in Mountain Village, he said maybe it's a good sign for the fish. The water's been too warm when they start coming in. Maybe it's time just right for them. So if we get a burst of salmon, king salmon, maybe that, what do you call that disease, on the king salmon's heart, maybe it won't show up this summer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stanislaus. Do we have anyone in District Y2? Please press star 6 to unmute.
Hello, this is Nicholas Spitzer here in Marshall.
Go ahead.
We've been having lots of debris floating by with this high water raised maybe 8 to 10 feet in the past week. So there's a lot of logs floating down, a lot of sticks and grass. That nobody's setting 4-inch nets right now. Too much sticks in the river. Haven't seen anybody going out or hear of anybody going out to set nets. And that's pretty much all I have to say.
Hey, Serena.
What's going on?
Hey, Serena.
Hi. You hold on. Someone has a call on hold. These guys. Here.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, hold on. Okay. Was that Mika?
Hi, this is Mika from Mountain. I have a short report. I haven't started doing the surveys yet, but I saw one guy caught some sea and whitefish, but I didn't notice any chums. And he has a net, I think, in front of the village that he checks once a day, and a 4-inch net look like. And the water is pretty high up here. Last week we had lots of west wind, so hopefully all that fish got counted last week when the fish was moving. But we had lots of tons of west wind last week. And the water is really high for this year. We have no sandbar in front of the village. So and you can barely make it down to the spring water unless you climb down the hill, if you know where that's at. And that's pretty much all I have.
Great. Thank you, Nita.
Yep.
Do we have anyone else in District Y2? Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Okay, moving on to District Y3. Do we have anyone from Russian Mission, Holy Cross, or Shagluk?
Hello?
Yes, Evil, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I hope everybody's summer's going okay. Pretty cold here. We had a kind of awkward breakup. The ice kind of just melted and left, and the water stayed low for a while, and then all of a sudden the water shot up just like 10 days ago or so, a week ago or so. And then after that, all the there was probably a day and a half of good logs running, and then after that, just a whole bunch of trash. But the water is up and holding at the level it's at. There's basically no south tank. And on this north side, when you drive to the fish camps, the water, you can't drive to the fish camps by the beach. The water is up into the willows. So there's been a lot of fishing activity, a lot of people hustling to get some, try to get a taste of fish before and after the restrictions started. So there's been not too much fish caught, but there's been a lot of fishing activity going on. One of the guys was coming home from checking his net in his fish camp yesterday, and right, I don't know if you guys know Russian Mission, but at the end of our runway, there's a creek, and or is the mouth of a creek, and that guy was coming home, and there was a brown bear in his, or its two babies, trying to run into town. He turned them around. And but that's the big excitement for here. Other than that, there's been not too much fish caught, enough to taste, but everybody's pretty, everybody understands the restrictions, you know, but we wish that they'd relax up a little bit so we could get a little better opportunity to have a taste of salmon and before we get shut down for a year. So there is a lot of trash and logs blown down, though. That's pretty much it. And it's been real cold here, so that's pretty much it for here. Thanks.
Thank you, Basil. Do we have anyone else from District Y3, Russian Mission, Holy Cross, or Shagluk on the line? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute. We have someone walking around. Sounds like going up or downstairs. So please mute your phone. We'll move on to District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Kaltag, Nalato, and Koyukuk. Again, calling on District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Kaltag, Nalato, or Koyukuk. Please press star 6 to unmute. We'll move on to District, or we'll actually move up the Koyukuk River, Huslia, Hughes, Alakakit, Alatna, or Bettles.
Hello?
Yes, Daryl, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just curious. You know, we've been
talking about limits and everything. Did we ever, you know, look back at what happened to the fish stock or anything like that? Did we have any kind of, you know, get together and find out, you know, why everything plummeted or anything like that? We never did, you know, try to prevent, you know, so we could prevent it from happening, you know, somewhere and something else or anything like that. We seem to have just kind of skipped over it, I guess. I haven't, you know, looked at anything in that kind of detail of, you know, why the fish, you know, took this bad turn, and we never did, you know, have any discussion on it. And I was just curious, you know, in our area, you know, the water was kind of low this spring, so it didn't really come up till a little later. The weather was pretty cold. Not a lot of movement up there, but lately the water's been a little higher now, so the water's starting to come up. I guess the snow is finally starting to melt in the mountains, so we're finally getting a little more springtime weather with us this summer. So, yeah, I was just curious about, did they have any dialogue on, you know, trying to figure out why, you know, this fish all of a sudden started disappearing or anything like that. I just didn't have any clue as to why we haven't had any discussion on that. It's just, you know, something for us to look back in the years, and we haven't, you know, seem to be trying to figure things out, but we need to really get to the heart of things and find out, you know, how could we maybe look at how could we get what we need back in the river. Thanks.
Thank you, Daryl. You pose a very good question, and that's why I believe we have ongoing research projects, and I can throw it out to ADF&G or U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to talk about their research projects that they've done during the sort of the declines or it was active. I'm not sure they don't know right offhand, but I'll go ahead and throw it to them if they want to state anything, but I've definitely got that question jotted down so we can look into it more.
Hey, Serena, this is Shane Ransbury from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Fairbanks. And,
yes, Shane.
You know, I think that's a pretty big question, but I'll take a stab at it. So it kind of depends in part on what species. I think they're dealing with a mix of different issues, and different species are kind of affected by different issues to different amounts. So, like, for example, for the Chinook salmon, for whatever reason, we are having an issue over the last several years, but not so much in the very recent year in 2024. But in like 2020 through 2023, we were having an issue where a lot of, you know, not a huge number of king salmon were entering the river, but of the ones that were going and that were trying to make it to Canada, around 40% of them were dying or disappearing or something before they even make it to Eagle. So that kind of points to some sort of in-river issue that we're having where, you know, maybe they're having trouble getting through the rapids because there's high discharge or you know, I think one of the leading hypotheses, which made a lot of sense, was that they're having more issues with disease and with things like ichthyophthonus, which develop faster in warm water. So if they're experiencing warmer water and higher discharge than normal, and it's leading to them having this kind of disease outbreak at the same time on top of that, that the kind of this culmination of factors is making it so a lot of the fish that we are seeing at the mouth of the river just still aren't able to make it all the way to their spawning grounds. And we see that most clearly with the Chinook going to Canada, but it kind of applies, broadly throughout the drainage. And even though the fish that make it to the Canadian border, that doesn't necessarily mean that they made it all the way to spawning grounds in Canada. But on, you know, on top of that, there's just kind of a range of factors. You know, there could be issues out in the ocean. There can be issues with you know, like a key part in a salmon's life is when their juveniles out migrating to the ocean. And if something is messed up there with them coming out and getting their first bite feed in the ocean, then salmon can die in big numbers. And we don't have a great handle on that aspect of their life cycle. And we know that, you know, the ocean is changing, right? It's getting warmer, and with climate change, it also becomes more acidic as carbon dioxide becomes carbonic acid on the ocean. So there's kind of some general ecosystem factors that are playing out in the ocean, and it's a little bit unclear to us how well they are dealing with that transition into the marine environment. And then once they're, you know, as they're swimming around becoming adults, then we also have, you know, potential issues with bycatch and things like this. And we can get bycatch numbers from the pollock fleet. And there's a little bit of intercept as they're rearing them.
Trying to do things at once, like an idea.
But it's kind of a culmination of factors that's really causing us problems for something like king salmon. And then those don't even necessarily apply to what's going on in summer chum or fall chum. So like fall chum, for example, we know that they're having some habitat issues where, for example, in Canada, up in like the Kalani area, there was a glacier that used to feed Kalani Lake and the river there, Kalani River. And that was a big spawning area for fall chum. But as the glacier has melted, it's kind of started diverting water away from that river. And so we're just getting less production out of areas like that. There's also an issue that's very similar up in like the Fishing Branch River where, they're starting to notice more and more this kind of seasonal dewatering issue where the river will actually run out of water, including over areas where, fall chum salmon have laid their eggs. And the dewatered area, it's hard to know like how long that has been going on where we're having the seasonal dewatering of the Fishing Branch River, but it does seem to maybe be growing a little bit. And at least in some years covering some of the areas where chum salmon are spawning directly. And then we have issues like for summer chum, you know, there's up on the Keokuk River, we had issues a few years back where, with really hot water, people were noticing a bunch of dead summer chum in the water that presumably died before they were able to spawn. So we're definitely interested in getting better. And that's, you know, that's a part of why we're starting this, you know, the Keokuk, River Sonar Project to use Fish and Wildlife Service. So it should give us better assessment of how stocks are doing that are going up the Keokuk, and maybe we'd be alerted to something like that more quickly. But yeah, so it's a range of factors affecting our fish, and then projects that we have to address them are things like the Keokuk project. There are things like, you know, a host of ichthyophonus related studies that have been conducted over the last several years, that right now is kind of moving toward kind of creating like some kind of index or something to where, you know, we have continued sampling for ichthyophonus in the lower river, and maybe we could set up some way where, you know, we notice early on that it's a year that's going to be bad for ichthyophonus, and so we can adjust our escapement goals to accommodate that, right? So if ichthyophonus disease is going to be really bad, then maybe we want to make it so that there's more fish going upriver to spawn. And then there's also been a Chinook telemetry study in the past few years run by Fish and Game to have a better idea of how Chinook are surviving through the rapids and the flats area of the river. And gosh, yeah, I'm spacing a little bit, but there's been a bunch of different projects, and maybe Dina at Fish and Game or Holly Carroll here at U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service can speak a little bit more to that. But Yeah, it kind of depends. It's a host of issues, though. Thanks.
Hey, this is Daryl. Could I respond to that?
Yes, go ahead, Daryl.
Okay, so we're getting a lot of, you know, theories on what's going on there, but, you know, we know that fish like to migrate just like any other animal. There's a migration pattern. We understand that in the, you know, the villages. And when there's good migration, there's a lot of them. But the thing that really bothers me is that, you know, we tend to fish and we don't realize what the size of the fish is. Because if you look at in correlation to where they have to migrate, so say, for instance, the fish were migrating to Canada. Size is important because of the strength of the fish. And if you limit that or you take that away, you're not going to have fish that are going to migrate into Canada. They're going to go into other tributaries. That's when they start saying, hey, you know, we had 10,000 fish that disappeared between this sonar and up there in Eagle. Well, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, you could put into theory or you can try to explain, but all in all, it was the size of the fish, I think, that really affected how these migration patterns work and how they're going to be producing. My overall thinking on this is that we're creating a problem for predation, and we're seeing what's happening at the after effect now. When you start talking 2020, 2019, 2025, we're seeing the after effect of what happens after you take out, you know, most of the big fish that spawn way up in Canada or go up into the Kaikuk River. And when you talk about water warming, there's not only the water warming, there's also disturbance of like mining. So when a fish dies off, there's the reflection from the sun and it heats the water up, but it has to have to reflect off to something in the water. So if you get more sand in the water or more silt, you warm it up faster. So there could be, you know, other effects, but there was no study done. There's no real actual study of, you know, what this mining could do to these areas. Maybe it was up in Canada that, you know, it happened too. We don't know because there was no actual effects. Everybody, you know, was saying, oh, this happened, that happened. But when it came down to it, we did a lot of damage to the fish. And there's got to be a way to repair it. That's what I'm trying to find out. But, you know, it's when we keep, you know, dodging all the main things that happen to this fish, we're not going to really come to the bottom and settle. How could we put that fish back in the water until that is replaced or repaired? But, you know, it's just my thought. You know, we can do a lot of biologists and everything, but, you know, when it comes down to fishing on these rivers and understanding animals, you know, our people go way back with that. We took what we needed, but we didn't overfish or anything like that. It's just, you know, that's not saying that's a problem, but it could be a problem. Maybe overfishing was a problem. We don't know. Thank you.
Hey, Daryl. This is Shane Ransbergen from U.S. Fish Wildlife Service. Yeah, I think those are some really good points. And, yeah, I guess the big takeaway is that, you know, the agency staff, management staff, don't think that it's subsistence fishermen that caused the issue that we're in now. We're just worried that with the potential size of subsistence harvest, if we opened it up full bore, that we could have some lasting effects now that the salmon are doing as poorly as they are. And things like mining are not necessarily studied by me in particular, but there are certainly people studying the effects of mining on fish in the drainage. I think most of them would be either at the University of Alaska Fairbanks or at Habitat Division for Alaska Fish and Game. And that includes some things that end up with similar effects to mining, but that are not caused by mining. So, like up in the Kaikuk, we're having issues with, basically as the permafrost thaws, the rain and all that kind of stuff that's going through the groundwater can kind of flow over, subsurface rock formations, essentially, and leach acids and other things into the water. And we're starting to see that more and more, where we're getting this kind of like natural leaching of what can be fairly toxic compounds into parts of the Keokuk. And so that's studied in a big way by a group at USGS and at University of Alaska Fairbanks. And then your other point about the size of the fish, I think that's a good point too, because, you know, for years we did fish in both subsistence and commercial and the other forms of fisheries with pretty large mesh sizes. And that eventually, I can't remember what year it happened, but we brought the mesh size down to 7.5 inches for Chinook salmon. And I think that was helpful. I think that was a step in the direction to avoid us from continuing to harvest these really large fish kind of selectively, you know, harvest them more often than the others, because the larger fish do have more eggs per female. They do have, I think, an easier time getting up to the spawning grounds. And it's definitely possible that we've had some kind of like dampening effect on our fish, where they're not able to get to the size that they used to, or at least they don't get to that size as often as they used to. And we do monitor that year after year through various portions around the river where we get age, sex, and length information. But it can be kind of hard to know what exactly is causing different effects like that. And so, you know, like where I grew up down the Sacramento River, our king salmon just are smaller. And so, you know, I think there's a genetic component to that. There's a component that maybe previously we fished the larger fish a little bit harder than maybe we should have. But we have taken steps to account for that for years now, and it's just a little bit hard to understand, you know, what exactly would lead to us getting these big stocks of fish back of the older individuals. But yeah, it's, you know, it's a host of issues, and yeah, I mean we could speak to it more for each individual one. And I think some things just are going to take time for us to really tease out. So, anyway, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, Daryl and Shane, for that.
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, just basically, I just wanted to have some chatter about that. All the mining stuff where, you know, the things affecting the salmon. We are, Russian Mission is kind of like the upper reaches of the lower river. And, we do have good current around here, but once you get down past Pitcher's Point, then the water reel slows down the current. And then once you get to the mouth, there's tides that come in and out. So all that mining waste, that the rock drilling that's going on at the mouth of or headwaters of the river, we don't see it. We don't see hardly any sediment deposits around here, you know, new islands and stuff, unless something sinks. But you see all that mining sediment deposited at the mouth of the Yukon River, and the channel changes quite often. I'm not from way down that way, but I've been down there with the boat enough few times to see what's going on. And another thing that's worrying us down this way is the effects of mining and all the mining waste that's getting pumped into the river. The stuff was happening last year. Did that ever get resolved? Did the failing duck pond at the mine or whatever that was, did that ever get repaired or what? Because our ice didn't even get thick, and there was an open hole in front of our town all year long, and things like the mining waste getting pumped into the river and all that kind of unnatural stuff was lingering in our mind all winter long and still is. So if we can get some reports from Canada and get them to realize that
All that mining waste, it's just settling at the mouth of the river. So I just thought I'd throw that in there. Thank you.
Thank you, Basil. Do we have anyone from the Yukon Territory to provide any updates and insight on the Eagle Mine? I believe it's called Eagle Mine.
Serena, if no one from DFO wants to speak up, I can provide a very high-level summary.
Yes, go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yeah, so the most recent news, I should say that I join calls by the First Nation Nacho Nayak Dan, who hosts them, and they invite and have others participate from Yukon government, the federal government, including DFO and environment. And they do these weekly meetings. Essentially, their whole Friday is taken up by these meetings. But they check on the sites and conditions and continue to update their plans. So what's going on at site is they are treating water and even releasing some water, and it's a lot better than it used to be, but it still has high copper in it, so that's not great. But the alternative is they don't have a lot of water storage. So they've been working on water storage and treatment, but they're still not quite there with it. They're planning to start pumping groundwater and start treating that soon as well. And then for fish, they've been installing fish weirs to prevent larger fish from migrating up, so they'll be there for when Chinook show up. But right now the concern is more with grayling, because there's a spawning population in Hayward Creek, and they've got these weirs in place so that if anything changes upstream, they can stop fish from migrating up into those areas, and they could do a fish salvage and put them below the weir as well so they wouldn't be exposed. Currently, I believe only something large like a Chinook can get up through them, but there's no large Chinook in the area at the moment, and probably won't be for the salmon season. So things are improving, but they're still not perfect, and there's a ton of work going into it. Trying to think if there's anything else that's new that's coming out that I could share. It was a big discussion at the May gathering when it brings the Northern Shoshone together, as well as just concerns, and it has really infected NND's or Nacho Nayak Dan First Nations confidence in the area. So they're dedicating a ton of resources to this, particularly for fish in that grayling run. People used to go there every spring and fish, and this is the first year people didn't go. And then worry about wildlife and hunting and berries and food and stuff as well, that they would go to that area to harvest. So definitely lots of attention being put on it, and it's not perfect yet, but slowly getting better. Hopefully that helps. I'm not an expert in this. I just participate in those calls just so I can share information outwards.
Great. For that update, we'll continue on to with the Koyukuk River. Do we have anyone from Huslia, Hughes, Alakatic, the Latna, Bettles online? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. Okay, we'll move on to District Y5, A, B, C, and D. That includes Tanana, Rampart, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chalkeetsik, Vinitai, and Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle.
Serena, Andy.
Hi, Andy, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Andy Passage from Eagle. Not a lot going on up here. I think I'm the only person out with some small mesh gear, 2.5 and 4 inch mesh gear in the river for pike and sheepfish for dog food. River is very low, as is stated by folks up in Canada. We've had a very, very cold spring, so I'm still seeing snow up in the high country or in this country, which is pretty unusual for this time of year. I just wanted to share a perspective. I really appreciated hearing the conversation earlier about causes and effects for salmon declines, and I think there was some great discussion there. Certainly there needs to be a lot more, but I want to share a perspective that's a lot more long-term. I think one of the issues that we have oftentimes is that people come and go throughout agencies, and they don't know or haven't experienced firsthand long-term historical knowledge. Back in the 80s and early 90s, there was actually quite a bit of work done on over-harvesting or the harvest rate of salmon on the Yukon River. That was back when fisheries were incredibly strong, both commercially and subsistence, you know, up over 300,000 fish. I think some years even 350,000 fish. So very strong commercial fisheries, and there was a lot of concern even back then that we were over-harvesting salmon. There was also 9.5, 10-inch mesh gear in the water, which was targeting those 50- and 60-pound king salmon that were pretty abundant back in that time frame. Fast-forwarding to the late 90s, we started seeing a lot of or hearing a lot of concerns from people up in the Teslin region, which is the upper headwaters of the Yukon River, the very farthest spawning of Chinook salmon, and they were very concerned because fish were getting smaller, and they sounded the alarm, and then that progressed farther downriver and then finally hit the Alaska border probably in the mid-2000s. There was a strong effort to reduce mesh gear on the Yukon River to 6-inch, but it was turned down by the Board of Fish, and they modified it to 7.5. There was a lot of concerns that that was going to target the next largest age class. Quite a bit of debates at the Board of Fish for a couple of years on that topic. So the point I'm trying to make here is that we are studying the salmon based on what we're seeing right now, but there's been a lot of long-term studies done that we really should go back and look at what those studies were and what the projections were, what some of the opinions from those studies were asking or recommending. And I agree, I think probably one of the biggest impacts to our changing salmon and our productivity has been the large fish loss and the fecundity or the amount of eggs that they carried. And we never did anything in management to adjust for that. So it's been kind of a long, slow death by a thousand cuts. A lot of times, because this is such an incredibly complicated fisheries ecosystem and life stage, it's really hard to take a strong management action because of only one thing. And oftentimes it's a combination of many things happening that kind of sneak up on you. And so that's my perspective after watching this very closely and being involved pretty heavily since the late 90s. That's kind of the perspective I have. So it's not something that just all of a sudden happened. It's something that's been going on for now over two decades that we just didn't take the time and energy or we didn't recognize and acknowledge what we needed to do to reverse those trends or try and mitigate for them. I just wanted to share that perspective because I think that's often lost as we get new managers into systems that don't and haven't lived 20 or 30 years ago with the fisheries. That's all. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time. I really appreciate those discussion points, and I think we really should have a lot more discussion about some of those things so that we can do a better job in the future.
Great. Thank you, Andy. We are still in District Y5. Communities include Tanna, Rampart, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chalkeetsuk, Vintai, Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle. Is anyone online? Okay, moving on. We'll go to District 6, Manly, Minto, Nanana, Fairbanks. Again, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. Hearing none, we'll move into Canada. Do we have anyone from Canada on the line? Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pelly Crossing, Carmax, Teslin. We'll open up for any discussion or comments or questions at this time. Just yes, go ahead. What's your name?
Gabriel.
Yes. Go ahead.
The one concern I was worried about, they were talking about the mining. Just recently, there was a cyanide spill. I think I heard it was about 1,000 gallons, and I didn't hear any updates on that, but we know cyanide can even kill the fish too, and probably run to the Yukon. I didn't hear an update about that, but and it's many factors of the Yukon, and even in the out in the ocean too, you know. Even after that big earthquake too, you know, in Japan, we know that there was a lot of nuclear like waste. You know, it's all man-made, but you know, the factors of what is really going on right now. But the main thing I was kind of worried about, you know, I didn't hear anything about that big spill of cyanide. Was there any updates on that? Thank you.
Hi, Gabriel. Elizabeth McDonald just gave a brief update just a bit ago, and that's what Basil Larson from Russian Mission asked, and so she provided an update. If you missed it, you can go back to the recording. We will post our summary on our website, and we will email it out so you can go back and into the call and grab any information you need during that time.
Okay, thank you. The phone was like being interrupted, but thank you anyway.
Yes, thank you, Gabriel. Again, the floor is open for any questions or discussion.
This is Daryl. Sorry for opening up, you know, but I just had, you know, questions, and I figured this is the best place that we can try to resolve some answers. You know that we're going into this global warming, and the federal government is not recognizing that, you know, we're having any problems with global warming. They're trying to get rid of a lot of the, you know, ways for, I guess it's, maybe it's because of, they want more resources out of the land, and not recognizing that our people does not meet their subsistence needs. I mean, how do we, you know, go and react to, you know, the state on that when we don't know if they're going to be able to, you know, raise their hand against the federal government for trying to control what's really actually happening here in Alaska. Well, you know, I'm not saying that they're not doing their job. It's just that, you know, we're facing a crisis here. We're starting to see that the prices of food is going up with this tariff going on, and we're struggling to meet our subsistence needs. We need to be recognized. I mean, how are we going to be, you know, able to, you know, put a point across that we're struggling out here with our food resources? And when we had a full plate of food back in the 70s, there was everything on there. Now we've got very few animals that we can depend on, and the resources are getting harder and harder because
we're not doing the study that needs to manage what we got left. We're still, you know, operating on maximum yield when we should learn to use, you know, sustained yield. Because when we did the maximum yield with the fish, this is what happened. You know, I'm not saying that it's actually what happened, but it's pretty much what I've seen over the years. It's the same thing that happened when we had our caribou coming through from the middle, you know, the middle area of the Alaska, and we had a lot of caribou that used to come through, and we depended on that, and then all of a sudden we don't have caribou in our area no more. We have to go way out of our villages to do it. But, you know, I'm concerned that, you know, these people that live in the villages, they're not able to sustain their lifestyle no more, and it's making it harder and harder, and you're starting to see more people going toward the streets of Fairbanks or Anchorage or more higher cancer levels, you know, so it's concerning. I'm just, you know, trying to prevent something that we should be able to prevent if we look at it in the right way. I mean, we've been trying too hard to fill their plate with their resources that, you know, provide them money. We need to start getting back to where our people are. It's just, you know, my thought on that, but, you know, it's hard for all of us to try to step up and prevent what's happening. But we got to step up and do it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Daryl, for all your comments. We always try to encourage people from the communities, you know, to participate in the Bird of Fisheries, the Bird of Game, North Pacific, you know, all of these arenas where regulation is affected and developed and enforced. So it's and that's why we try to include or encourage people from the communities to participate in those meetings, because it's very important to provide that type of information that you just delivered to the boards that to look at the regulations and approve them. So great comments, great feedback. The floor is open. Any comments?
Good afternoon, Serena. This is Stanislav.
Dan, go ahead.
Yes, a couple of questions I have. This time last year, do we have the biologist or the scientist have recorded information on the water? Everybody that's been reporting from their communities is so far it's been cold all spring and all beginning of the June. So, and another thing is we
Dan,
do.
I can hear you. I hope you're outside.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can, but we can hear the wind.
You couldn't hear the wind?
Yeah, or you're walking or something.
No, I'm sitting down on the table.
Okay, well, there's static. Your light is on.
Okay. I wanted to know if there's any scientist or biologist that would give us an update on the water temperature between past 3 years and this year, this time of the year, because everybody that's been called so far reported that it's been cold from beginning spring to now. And in last year, years before, this time of the year, it'd be really hot.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, back to the ichthyophthalmus, is it only determined and at where last time that ichthyophthalmus is noticed in the king salmon? Is there any effort for a study to be done on the king salmon on ichthyophthalmus further down below Rampart? those are the questions. And also, I have questions for Shane. I know at the Yirtla board meeting, we discussed, there was a discussion on the maps, whether the Fish and Wildlife would be able to allow kinks in the streams that are non-salmon. What's the situation or outlook on that so far? Would because people are asking me questions, are we able to set 6 inches in these lower rivers that salmon do not, we know for a fact that salmon don't go in there, only target sheepish and whitefish. That's just for this, Anunnaki River where my camp is located. I had my net out for 3-4 days. I got enough sheepish and whitefish and I pulled them out. I never tried to set my 4 inch because I know it'll be slammed with, pikefish. And I don't deal with pikefish during the summer. It's only in the springtime. Thank you very much.
Hi, Stanislaw. This is Shane from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So I guess a few things to answer your questions. So if we look at, I don't have the like air temperature information in front of me, but if we look at the water temperature for this year, this time of this year, compared to this time the last 3 years, it's a colder year by quite a bit. And I can't really tell what the exact numbers are because I'm just looking at a chart, but, you know, it's finished at like 10 degrees cooler in some years. But the main takeaway is, yes, it is a colder year pretty much across the board compared to 2022 through 2024. But hopefully it'll stay that way, right? Because it can still warm up depending on how the weather goes. And last year was quite a bit warmer than it is today. But then at some point in early July, it went from being a warmer than average year to a cooler than average year. And we had much higher survival for king salmon getting from the lower river to the Canadian border last year compared to the years before it. So I think, you know, it's hard to say this early on, but it is colder than previous years. And if that maintains through July, then, yeah, hopefully that would mean that we are not going to see as much mortality from things like Ichthyophonus. And then whether we have studies in the lower river for Ichthyophonus, I'm not sure. I know that they're continuing to take samples. I believe it's at Pilot Station, but that's a fish and game project, and so I'm not quite sure what all the details are on that. And then to answer your third question about the 6-inch in non-salmon areas, so we are still going forward with that, but that won't be until fall season. So as we get closer to fall season, we'll have some stuff come out with the exact areas where we're going to allow 6-inch gill nets for non-salmon. And it's basically in a bunch of areas where salmon aren't going. So there will be maps coming out for each district, and we'll go over that more later in the year. But, yes, we are still planning on going through with allowing 6-inch opportunities for non-salmon during the fall. And that was after feedback from a whole host of people up and down the river supporting that. So, yeah, there will be more information on that later in the year. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
One more question for the Lower Yukon.
Yes, go ahead.
A couple of years ago, I asked how the Atlantic salmon are doing, and they were saying they were still averaging the same. What about last year? I know it's kind of early to say about the salmon over at the Atlantic side. Is it still the same or declining?
I do not have information about the Atlantic salmon. I've been only working on Yukon River salmon or Pacific salmon. So if that's something you would like to receive, we can definitely get some information and forward it to you.
Serena, is Daryl?
Yes, go ahead, Daryl.
Thank you.
I was just curious, you know, how others are doing things. I know Washington State is doing something, and I'm not hearing anything about the size of the fish, how they are down there at Washington State. Or, for example, like, you know, someplace like, I heard, you know, about Chile, where they control their, you know, high seas fisheries. I mean, there's other areas that probably have examples that we could use to provide input for our, you know, strategy on how to get our salmon back in the river. I was just curious about that. Thank you.
Thanks for providing that information. We also been gathering some information about restricted areas for trawling.
Serena, Andy?
Yes, go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, thank you. Daryl, I appreciate a lot of your comments and questions. One of the things that I'd like to promote at this teleconference is the work that's trying to be done to develop a gravel-to-gravel approach for salmon management. So throughout the whole life cycle of the salmon, from the spawning events that happen in the upper Yukon and up the high tributaries on the Alaska side, all the way through their out-migration and then their marine life stages and then the return. I think that is the future of what we need to do for salmon management. And it's very complicated because of our fractured management systems. There's so many different entities that have management control over different life stages. So it's a very challenging project to try and take on. But I think if we really want to develop a long-term sustainable salmon management system, working towards a gravel-to-gravel approach is going to be essential for doing that. And as people who live and depend on the salmon, we all need to provide that traditional knowledge and that local knowledge that we have. And that needs to be testimony at Board of Fish, at the North Pacific Management Council, to our legislators, to the Yukon River Panel. All of these entities need to hear that information. And we also need to hear a unified voice on the Yukon River for gravel-to-gravel approach for salmon management. That's the only way we're gonna hopefully leverage actions. And I think one thing I'd like to point out, I don't know that many people on the Yukon River drainage understand what's happening on the Kuskokwim, but they have a dual management system on the Kuskokwim River. And it has been incredibly effective. It's been pretty active now for, I believe, 8 to 10 years. I might be off on that, but I know it's been in place for quite a number of years, and they've been very good at getting escapements. It's a little bit shorter river system, so not quite as complicated as the Yukon River, but it's a great example of how when tribes and agencies get together and work together, they can have some really positive effects. So I just wanted to bring that to people's attention, and I think it's really important for people on the Yukon River to voice those opinions and support those initiatives as we move forward. Thank you, Serena. Thank you, Daryl. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you, Andy. I will do a last call for any discussion or questions.
Hey, Serena, is Daryl?
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry about that, but I just had a concern about we haven't really touched on anything that's happening out in the ocean. I see that, you know, the increase of hatchery fish is going to be affecting some of our areas. And, you know, the state doesn't have any kind of a biology on there yet or anything. But if it happens, you know, like the way with our fish, when we start losing our fish, maybe this is going to have some effect on our natural stock. I just want to make sure that we touch on that topic.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. Well, thank you all for your time and your comments, your feedback. Thank you to the managers for providing your reports for this week. Next week, we'll have a little bit more in-depth overview of the Yukon River preseason meeting that was held in Fairbanks, where we had representations from all the tribal leadership along the Yukon River. And we'll be posing some questions to the participants. If you'd like to provide environmental updates for your communities, you can do so during that time. Thank you all for your time, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Have a good day.